When his wife turned up dead in her bed, he was off on one of his many fishing trips. A threatening voicemail said they were coming for him next, and neighbors whispered about his relationship with the so-called taxi lady. This is the story of Eli Weaver, the Amish stud who just couldn't be contained by his conservative religion. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here, and hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. When I was trying to figure out what I wanted to cover today, I came across a headline that read, "Why did Amish stud Eli Weaver plot to have his wife murdered?" And you know me, obviously I'm not just going to pass by the phrase Amish stud. I'm from a farm in the Midwest, and we were definitely Amish adjacent. Anytime we passed by a buggy in our pickup truck, there was just this feeling of mystery for me. They look so romantic in their black outfits, but why would they choose to live that way? Today's case begins on June 2, 2009 in Apple Creek, Ohio. It's a little village of about 1,100, kind of in the middle of nowhere, south of Cleveland near Worcester. It's known for its Johnny Appleseed Festival and the nearby Quilt Fair. When you look up any of the surrounding towns on Google Maps, the first image that pops up is probably of a barn. Murder is incredibly, incredibly rare amongst the Amish. One report says only two men have killed their wives in the past 250 years. So when 30-year-old Amish mother Barbara Weaver was found shot in her bed that day in June 2009, it was unexpected and shocking. But people in the community also sort of knew who to point to. Barbara Miller was born in 1979 in the Andy Weaver sect of the Amish, a very strict community that she nonetheless loved being a member of. There are no photos of her since Amish people don't get their pictures taken, but she was a friendly, soft-spoken girl who loved to read Amish love stories, a laid-back sweetheart who just wanted to grow up to be a wife and a mother. When she caught the eye of the charismatic Eli at age 18, all of her dreams were about to come true. They got married on May 27, 1999, and had five kids within their first 7 years of marriage, three boys and two girls. Eli, born on September 2, 1979, ran a sporting goods and firearms shop right next to their house. Barb sewed the family's clothes, tended to their garden, and made things by hand, the old-fashioned way. Their county is home to one of the largest populations of Amish people in America, and they say it's not their ways that are strange. They say this is how America was founded, it's just that it changed around them. They have horse-drawn buggies instead of cars, hand-powered farm tools instead of tractors, and ice boxes instead of electric refrigerators. Barb's community had no electricity and no phones. Well, except for one. There was one landline that all of the families in the sect shared, only to be used in case of emergency. And that's what a neighbor used on the morning of June 2nd, when one of Barb's children came running from the Weaver home and said Barb wouldn't wake up. The neighbor took one look at Barb in her bed, saw blood on her nightgown, and called the sheriff. When the ambulance arrived, they found that Barb had no pulse. Blood had spilled onto the chest area of her nightgown. Gunshot powder on her blankets showed that the wound to her chest would have been made at very close range. Barb had no gunshot residue on her hand, so it wasn't self-inflicted. There was no sign of forced entry, and cash lying in open sight hadn't been taken. So there was no clear motive, but it must have been done by someone with access to the house. Eli's sporting goods store next door was closed that morning, and no one had seen the 29-year-old. Their first thought, giving him the benefit of the doubt, was that maybe he had been taken somewhere and shot too. A witness had seen him leave at 3 a.m. for a fishing trip, which wasn't unusual for him. Lake Erie was an hour away, and the fish would be most active at dawn. He returned 4 hours after Barb was initially found dead and immediately went to talk to the police, but he had no explanation as to why someone would want to kill his wife. Eli said he'd come home at 11 p.m. from another fishing trip and gone to bed. When he got up before 3 a.m. to leave for the next trip, Barb woke up to say goodbye to him and everything seemed normal. The sheriff conducted a gunshot residue test on his hands and it came back negative. His friends from the fishing trip assured authorities that he'd been with them the whole time. And then a little clue was discovered by a neighbor. They called the police and said a creepy message had been left on the community phone's voicemail. It said, "Eli, you can run, but you can't hide. Obviously, we got the wrong person last night." So it seemed that Barb had been an innocent casualty of Eli's beef with someone else. But then Barb's sister came forward, and she had some very interesting insider information. She said Eli had a history of cheating. He'd been involved in several affairs. Infidelity had been a problem with him from the moment he started dating Barb. You've probably heard of Rumspringa, the period in an Amish teenager's life where they're allowed to venture out into the real world and experience what it's like outside of their strict community. Only about half of Amish teens choose to do it, but they might go to concerts or parties. They might try alcohol. They might drive a car or even wear quote-unquote normal clothes. And then after this period of wild experimentation, they have to decide to be baptized and live forever as Amish or leave the community. Almost 90% of them choose to stay. But it sounds like Eli wasn't content to just live a quiet life with his wife inside the community. Barb's sister said that he had an attraction to the forbidden. He would sometimes see women outside of the Amish faith after he started dating Barb and had cheated twice during their marriage. During those times, he would leave Barb and his church. And the church would shun him, and his wife would be despondent, but she had 5 children she had to raise. Eli would always return because it turns out that life on the outside isn't easy when you've been completely cut off from society for your entire existence. He'd return home and apologize to the church elders, knowing they and Barb would take him back. Of course, the church just wanted to see their prodigal son where he belonged, and Barb was too religious to ever divorce him. She hoped he would eventually turn his life around and really commit to making things work with her. She wrote a letter to a counselor once that read, "Where did my friend, love, trustworthy husband go to? He hates me to the core." Here in front of the police after Barb's murder, her sister said that Barb had recently been suspecting Eli of cheating again. She had called him distant, both emotionally and physically. He seemed to be gone a lot, as evidenced by his back-to-back fishing trips on the days before and after Barb was killed. She didn't worry about Eli hurting her necessarily, but Barb had this idea that another woman might try to harm her out of jealousy. You know, to have this guy all to herself. Detectives called Eli back in the next day to talk about his cheating, and he said he hadn't done that in years. But he refused to answer more questions without an attorney, and his attorney advised him to keep quiet until they could talk. Of course, Eli would do everything in his power to help the investigation just as soon as he could. But in the meantime, neighbors told police a little secret Eli had been withholding. It turns out that he had been spending much too much time with the quote-unquote taxi lady. See, the Amish aren't allowed to have phones, but they can use someone else's. They're not allowed to have cars, but someone can drive them around. So this taxi lady had been driving Eli everywhere lately, including on his fishing trips. The taxi lady was Barbara Raber. I'll call her Raber so as to not confuse her with Eli's wife, Barb. She was a Mennonite, part of a less conservative Christian group with different branches that allow more use of technology or access to regular clothing. Raber was 39 years old, born on May 20, 1970, and had 3 young children. She was adopted by an Amish family and raised in the community, but later left with her husband to become a Mennonite instead. She lived nearby and had electricity, a phone, and a car. She hired herself out as a driver for Amish people who weren't allowed to drive themselves. When detectives called to ask if she knew anything about Barb's death, Raber immediately asked, "Am I a suspect?" So if she wasn't before that, she definitely was now. She said she and Eli had been close for about 6 years and that at first it was all business. She simply provided a service he needed. But it eventually crossed boundaries, in his barn and in her car, that they both came to regret, and their affair had ended 6 months prior, for the sake of their marriages. But she said they remained friends and she continued to drive him if his friends were also with them. Raber claimed that she dropped them off at 11 p.m. the night before the murder, which aligned with Eli's story, and then she stayed home with her husband. But then a 25-year-old woman contacted police and said she'd had an affair with Eli. She heard about the murder and wanted to talk because he'd said disturbing things to her about Barb. She met Eli 2 years prior on a chat app called MocoSpace that was designed to compete with MySpace. Eli's username was Amish Stud. I'm dying to know if this is something he somehow got from TV because I learned that there was a sketch on the Ben Stiller show in the 90s called Amish Studs. It stars a very young Bob Odenkirk who says, "Her body is forbidden fruit and I'm a fruit fly." But it's a little hard for me to imagine Amish Eli having awareness of a TV show from 1992 when I didn't. Anyway, Eli called himself Amish Stud and posted selfies of his nude torso. And I mean, you have to hand it to the Amish. All of that physical labor really helps the physique. His profile said, "Who wants to do an Amish guy?" And I'm telling you in the most judgmental way that he used the number 2 and an exclamation point instead of a question mark. And there was no question that women wanted to do an Amish guy. They came out of the woodwork for him with usernames like Too Much Ass. Again, the number 2. This 25-year-old told the police that Eli talked to her on a cell phone that he said he needed for his business, even though that, of course, wouldn't have been allowed by his religion. The woman said he was more charismatic and outspoken than your typical Amish man. You know, a real stud. She said that they just had a short fling, but even in that little time, he was willing to talk with her about how unhappy he was in his marriage. And during these conversations, he would muse about how he would kill someone. He'd casually say things like, "If you see my wife in the driveway, run her over." He also knew which mushrooms were poisonous, and the way he talked about it weirded this woman out. She wasn't on Moco Space anymore and didn't have Eli's cell number, but she agreed to create a new Moco profile in front of the authorities to see if she could lure Eli to talk to her. She sent the Amish stud a message asking what was going on with him in light of the murder and left her phone number. He called her within minutes and so calmly talked about his wife being dead, like he really didn't care. Now the sheriff's department had his secret cell phone number and could subpoena his phone records. They dug in and found that Eli had multiple dating profiles and several past girlfriends, including one he's rumored to have a child with. And these women all made the same kinds of claims. They said he would make these creepy comments about wanting his wife to be run over. He'd asked if they knew anyone who would kill her. The authorities also found out that Eli's secret cell number was being billed to none other than Barb Raber, the taxi lady. And the two of them texted like crazy, in more than just a friendly way, despite her claims that they'd broken up 6 months before. They also exchanged ideas about how best to kill Barb, right there in writing. He asked Raber to blow up the house, and she asked, "What about the children?" He said they were innocent and would go straight to heaven. They talked about carbon monoxide, sleeping pills, even rat poison. And Eli had actually bought some rat poison. But I mean, didn't he know that it takes a pretty big dose of rat poison to kill a human and that it's a really slow process? Now you see the danger of being cut off from society for too long with no access to true crime podcasts. On June 1st, the night before Barb was found dead, Raber texted Eli that she was afraid to go through with their plan. She asked where she should park, how she was supposed to see in the dark, how she would get inside the house. Eli calmly answered her questions and said he'd leave the door open for her. The rest is disturbing history. On June 10th, Eli and Raber were both arrested separately at their homes. Raber's computer was taken, and there were 841 searches on it about how to poison someone. Eli maintained his innocence and wouldn't cooperate, but Raber spilled everything. She said she was in love with Eli, but he said they could only really be together if they killed his wife. Because, of course, Amish can't divorce. Clearly, murder is the only alternative. Raber said she agreed that it would be best for Eli to have the fishing trip alibi, and then she would do the dirty work to keep his hands clean, literally since the sheriff tested him for gunpowder residue that day. She parked in the nearby woods at about 4:30 a.m. and walked through the yard in the dark, snuck into the Weaver home through the unlocked door with her husband's rifle, and got to Barb's bedroom. But as she watched the sleeping woman, Raber got cold feet. She said she decided she would only scare Barb, but the gun went off accidentally while she was standing in the doorway. Of course, the evidence would say otherwise. The gunpowder on Barb's blanket showed that the killer hovered right over her as she innocently slept. Eli and Raber were both indicted on aggravated murder charges. On August 27, 2009, a couple of months after Barb's death, Eli's defense team approached the prosecution about a plea deal. Eli would admit to conspiracy to commit murder and testify against Raber for a lesser sentence. His story was that it was Raber's idea to kill Barb. She needed them to be together, and there was just no talking the bloodthirsty taxi lady out of it. Eli never showed any remorse at all as he maintained that he was only coerced into going along with this evil Mennonite mastermind. Raber turned down a similar plea deal because she believed she could prove her innocence. She had changed her story about the accidental shooting and now said she didn't even know if she was in the house at all. She didn't remember anything. It was probably Eli who shot Barb before he left for the fishing trip. Her trial began on September 16, 2009. The prosecution framed her as a jealous lover who wanted to eliminate the competition, reminding the jury that the murder was premeditated over text. A friend of Raber's testified to explain the threatening call to Eli that was left on the community voicemail, saying Raber had asked him to make the call to take the heat off Eli. He did it without question because they were hunting buddies. Then Eli got on the stand himself and said he didn't think Raber was really going to do it. I guess all of the talk of running Barb over and buying the rat poison was just some kind of joke to him. He said that they met a week after the murder and that Raber apologized for everything and asked him how to best clean her husband's gun so it would look like it hadn't been used at all. There was no physical evidence to place Raber in the house, no fingerprints or anything, and no murder weapon was ever found. And the death certificate says that Barb died at 2 a.m., which would mean that Eli had still been at home. Of course, the coroner says that the time of death is always a very broad estimate. And those text messages from Raber asking where to park and how to get in the house look pretty bad. After a 3-day trial, Raber was found guilty and was sentenced to 23 years to life in prison, 20 years for the murder and 3 years for the gun. Raber tried to appeal in 2010 on the basis that she felt she was questioned after asking for an attorney, the state didn't have the proper warrant for her text messages and computer searches, and that the evidence wasn't actually weighted against her. The bit about asking for an attorney is interesting because during her interrogation, she did say things like, "Can I have an attorney?" and, "Well, I mean, I'd still like to have my lawyer here." But these aren't considered to be explicitly invoking counsel, and I'm inclined to agree. "Can I have an attorney?" sounds like, "Am I allowed to have an attorney if I want one?" which is different from, "I want one." The court wasn't swayed by her appeal either, and Raber remains behind bars. She's currently serving at the Ohio Reformatory for Women in Marysville and will be up for parole in June 2032. Eli pleaded guilty to complicity to commit murder and got 15 years to life. His children went to live with Barb's sister. He's currently housed at Grafton Correctional Institution near Cleveland. It looks from his prison photo that he's still wearing his traditional suspenders on the inside, and he got an ad printed in an Amish newsletter requesting female pen pals. Eli will be up for parole next year in 2024 when he's 44 years old. Ladies, watch out for the Amish stud on those dating apps. This is such a sad story to me because this poor woman just wanted to be a wife and a mother, and she was suckered by this guy like so many other women would be after her. Eli was just a selfish person who wanted the benefits of having a loving wife and a caring church community, but also wanted to do whatever and really whoever he felt like. He wrecked not only his own life, but the lives of the people who loved him most, from his wife to his children to even this Patsy who thought he loved her back. I'm not letting her off the hook here, but she was clearly used. As Eli's lawyer said, if he had left the community, he would have been shunned. If his wife is dead, they pat him on the back. But I mean, that's also one of the downfalls of living in such a strict society, where killing your wife feels like the only way to have the life you want. And the rules of this society seem to be weighted against women so hard. Like, at one point, a man from the Amish community caught Eli engaging in relations with a non-Amish woman, and he went to their church bishop, who simply said Eli wasn't allowed to have contact with the woman anymore. He didn't get into trouble at all. Eli's own children saw their father physically abuse their mother, but it was well known that if a woman went to the bishop, he would have asked, "What did you do that your husband would treat you like this?" The rules of the community just don't properly protect people. And a man like Eli should have never been given that much power because he was a man who liked to have control. Neighbors say he wouldn't give Barb money even when she needed it to care for the children, although apparently his store brought in plenty to go around. He was just an everyday narcissist, like so many murderers before him, so delusional that he thought he'd be the one to get away with it. You can see this story dramatized on Lifetime now in the new movie Amish Stud, the Eli Weaver story. Crime TV fans will love seeing Penelope Garcia from Criminal Minds as Barb Raber. Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.